son. Hello there.
Salve. I suspect that most of you have been sitting there for 2.5 hours. And some of you may think you've got diverticulitis ulcers. And maybe some of you have DVT, deep vein thrombosis. So if you'd like to stand up and stretch, come on. Yeah. You can tell I was a nurse once upon a time. And I still know basic principles. When Bueno Pomarillo, chairperson, ladies, gentlemen, and colleagues, and new friends, before I start, I would like to thank the organizing committee of ANIARTI for inviting me to your excellent conference. I feel very privileged, honored, and pleased to be here at your 23rd annual Congress. At the same time, I would like to thank my colleagues, Beata Batok from Denmark and Aysel Badir from Turkey, for allowing me to use some of their data, which I'll be sharing with you soon. I would also like to thank our two previous speakers for touching on some of the topics I will be discussing. So, in this short presentation, I plan to outline the development of EFNA, examine the challenges facing critical care nurse education in Europe, and present a position statement that the Federation has developed as a vision for critical care nurse education in Europe. As you probably know, EFNA was officially launched in 1999. Since the beginning, the aim of the Federation is to promote collaboration and cooperation, and this has enabled us to achieve our objectives in many areas. We have now expanded to 23 countries, representing 24 associations and approximately 22,000 critical care nurses. That is a significant voice in Europe. For many of these nurses, developing critical care education is a priority, whether they are in Northern Europe, Eastern Europe, or Southern Europe. Before discussing critical care education, we need to think of some of the points that we face every day at our work. We know that there are demands for critical care. We know we are treating more acutely ill patients and elderly patients with complex critical care needs. We all have to work to budget, and critical care nurses are expected to demonstrate cost effectiveness. Maybe not in Italy, but in UK and the United States, there's acute shortage of nurses, and they're always having to borrow from abroad. In Europe, the introduction of junior doctor's hours has changed many things. Nurses and healthcare professionals now have to assume responsibilities which are new and challenging. This means we must address how we train, educate, and make new professionals competent. And finally, the evidence-based movement has radically altered the way we plan and deliver care. Nurses now and in the future have to have the skills of critically appraising the literature so they can assess the quality of it and decide whether to implement it or not. So you can see that we have to have these points in our mind before discussing issues around education. So what do we know about critical care education in Europe? What I'm about to present is based on two studies or surveys conducted by colleagues in EFNA. The first was in 2002 and involved 17 countries. The second was completed this year and involved 10 countries. The first bar chart here asks, does your country have a critical care course? 15 out of the 17 countries said they did have a critical care course. Of those 15 countries, 11 required experience in critical care areas before doing a course. Interestingly, the amount of experience varied from 0 months to 36 months. To me, that's a very long time to wait. But on average, most countries expected between 12 to 18 months clinical experience before doing a critical care course. When looking at theoretical hours, we also see some variation. For example, you will see 200 hours here and around 600 hours, 700 hours there. This is very crude data, and one possible interpretation is that 200 hours represents the length of one module, whereas 600 hours represents an annual theoretical amount of hours. And it's something that EFNA needs to investigate a bit more. The next question asked, where is education delivered? The majority still is being delivered in universities and colleges of nursing. But there will be a big change here. In terms of MSCs and critical care, in 2002, only two countries had a master's program, one being in Iceland, the other in the UK. When we asked about qualifications, you can see that the most popular qualification awarded on completion of a critical care course was a certificate. A bachelor in nursing was quite rare, although that's quite popular in the United Kingdom. Some other aspects around education. Most critical care areas do have a practice educator. Curricula is taught by nurses in conjunction with doctors, physiotherapists. Having completed a critical care course does improve salary. Though interestingly, when we surveyed countries this year, and we asked, is annual updating compulsory? Only 2 out of the 10 countries said that they had to update annually in terms of their competencies in their practice. I think that's quite worrying. Why do nurses do critical care courses? Well, we have professional reasons, career improvement, financial prospects. But for most critical care nurses, it was the opportunity to learn and develop skills to nurse critically ill patients with complex needs. My last slide just emphasizes where the funding comes. For half of the respondents, education was funded by the state. And another half of the respondents, it was an individual plus support from the state that allowed people to do post-basic education. And in one country, this was to do with sponsorship from industry. But the analysis of these data and other findings suggests that there are lots of challenges facing education, and EFNA believes we need to address these. So to summarize, the duration of experience required before being eligible to undertake a course needs standardizing. Access to quality nurse education following registration within Europe is not consistent. There is also a movement to have education based in universities, and this may mean a change for some countries. We have seen that the content of programs varies, and this needs rationalizing. There is also no consensus on completions of a critical care, and these vary from master's to certificate level. There's also no standard model of how we fund critical care education in Europe. And this may be a big problem for some countries and some individuals, and may become barriers to accessing first-class critical care nurse education. The results from our studies and other European data also suggest that there's no specific preparation for nurse academics. Not only that, but they have mixed profiles. Some academics are expected just to work clinically or supervise students, prepare lectures, design curriculum, do research, and many other things, which makes their role very complex and difficult. One of the things that EFNA has done in response to this is to develop educationally focused objectives with the aim of establishing standards in education, harmonized education programs in critical care nursing across Europe, and provide conferences, congresses, and continuing education for critical care nurses. We have also tried to raise a debate. And we've done it in two ways. Something I call the practical activities and developing a position statement. And you can see here at the bottom, my EFNA colleagues and I working hard in developing a position statement. This slide illustrates the way that EFNA is trying to raise a debate and our concerted efforts to disseminate information, whether through Connect, our journal, to conference presentations, or discussions on our website. But perhaps the most obvious way that EFNA has attempted to address the educational challenges that exist between countries is to provide a position statement about critical care nurse education that offers some guidelines. I should add, this is not a definitive document, rather than a set of contemporary educational principles. The reason for this is that we felt it would be wrong to prescribe what each country must do. Instead, our efforts have been directed in providing educational model of good practice. The working group comprised of academics and practitioners, and we drew from a wide range of documents. And this is just a list to illustrate that we include various documents that reflect contemporary thinking around education. In preparing this position statement, we also felt that the EFNES values needed to be critical and fundamental. And we emphasized that the aim of critical care nursing is to establish a therapeutic relationship with patients and their relatives, and to empower the individual's physical, psychological, sociological, and spiritual capabilities by preventative, curative, and rehabilitative interventions. More importantly, EFNA also believes that patients and their families with healthcare needs have the right to receive individualized critical care from appropriately qualified and competent professional nurses with specialist skills, knowledge, and expertise. And you can see clearly how our educational principles are embedded in our philosophy. In developing this position statement, we drew heavily from EU documents. So much about what I'm going to say this afternoon, is consistent with current educational thinking and educational policies across Europe. The position statement makes it clear that post-registration nurse education should be delivered in universities or similarly accredited institutions. That education should promote employability and lifelong learning. That should be recognized by appropriate authorities and be available as a postgraduate cycle. By this I mean nurses who are registered should be able to follow study to degree, master's, or doctoral studies, and in this way contribute to the development of the workforce and of the nation. Critical care courses should also comprise of 50% educational hours. These hours could be face-to-face classroom education, could be library studies, personal study, and research. The aim should be to link the application of theory to practice. Educational critical care curricula should integrate the European credit transfer system. European credit transfer system is a way of crediting the hours spent in formal education, and in the future it will work as a tariff to allow mobility of critical care nurses to go between countries, to help promote and develop clinical staff, and be recognized by universities across Europe. It is further recommended, as we heard earlier, that critical care courses should comprise of a range of modules. Some will be core, such as evidence-based practice, critical appraisal, epidemiology, as well as clinically related subjects. There should also be some optional modules which develop the individual's intellectual capacities and broaden their horizons. Such modules might include leadership and policy. They may include change management theories, law and ethics, or decision making in practice. But all these modules should collectively go towards an award whether diploma, bachelor, master's degree, that is universally recognized. In my university, for example, students wishing to do a bachelor's degree must complete 120 credits. All these modules are 20 credits, except for the last one, which is 40 credits, and it's an extended piece of work. A student wishing to complete a critical care pathway would do a research module, specialist modules, an optional module, and then a 10,000 word extended study which combines research issues and subjects relating to critical care, which is very similar to your master's pathway. Now, this is the content that we've recommended in our proposal, and I'm not going to read it out. Suffice it to say that we've included concepts such as evidence-based practice, use of information technology to make it more contemporary and reflect what's happening today as opposed to 1993. It is important that programs in the future must reflect the realities and challenges of modern practice. The current must be current and dynamic, and the delivery should include classroom teaching, simulations, use of e-learning methods, assessment of competency, student-led presentations, and use of learning contracts. In addition to enhancing skills, the aim of the curriculum should be about developing analytical and problem-solving skills to enable nurses to demonstrate competency in decision-making and discretionary judgments. The emphasis of teaching should be about developing adult learning-centered theories. Now, we know that accessibility to critical care courses, which require regular attendance to a university or college, can be problematic, either in terms of traveling a long distance or being released away from the clinical area. Face-to-face education is but one way of delivering education, and higher institution educations must therefore consider alternatives and flexible models such as e-technology, CD-ROMs, teleconferencing, or study block options to ensure wider accessibility to critical care courses in urban and rural areas. The position statement also supports the principle that all critical care learners should be provided by an appropriately experienced and educated mentoring practice, who can facilitate the development of skills, knowledge, and achievement of competency. The mentor needs to be enthusiastic, motivated, and must also demonstrate evidence of ongoing professional development. For courses to remain vital, stimulating, and exciting, they must also involve clinical practitioners who can shape and inform the development of curricula that reflect the experiences of critical care practitioners. Daniela earlier on said that we need cultures that foster learning and inspire nurses to grow intellectually and professionally. And certainly, I believe that clinical audits need to be audited annually to make sure that the good learning environments, that they have the right resources and infrastructure to support students in achieving their learning objectives. We've also recommended that nurse academics must be qualified in that by education and experience, and that there should be a minimum of a master's degree. It is also important that each nation develops critical care education in a coherent way, and that considers national agendas and regional priorities. And finally, perhaps the most important thing, it is important to adopt easily readable and comparable degrees of education to allow mobility and competition. In other words, we must be able to compare degrees between countries, and in this way reduce much of the confusion that currently exists. The competency debate. There are many models of competency. In the UK, I have been involved with regional competencies, local competencies, and now the government is developing critical competencies nationally. Competency may be about measuring performance to establish consistency in the delivery of care. It may be also a way to reassure the public that we do have quality and we are improving our standards. However, I do have some concerns. The language of competency is always packaged as good for the professions, yet there's little agreement how we should assess it or how we should use them. Some commentators have suggested that competencies are about controlling the professions by reducing the complexity of what we do into a series of tiny little tasks. Others are more cynical and suggest that competencies are a way of oppressing professional salaries. There are some models of competency that I've used. They're often difficult and complex and also time consuming. But I am reassured by a new model which is developed by the British Association of Nurses in Cardiac Care. They have identified three stages. The core professional competencies at the bottom are the generic to all areas of nursing, and they would form the foundation of critical care. Core clinical competencies are those that develop an assessment, planning, implementation component. However, at this level, nurses are still working under protocols and guidelines. At a specialist level, we're talking about autonomous practice. The skills of these nurses would include interpretation, evaluation, refined judgments, and ability to implement interventions based on clinical assessments and examination of patients. But there are two other things I want to say about competencies. They should always or must be always linked to career progression, and to be of use and of value, they should be assessed annually. And these are two of my colleagues who've just got their competencies and they're going to go out to celebrate. So what about the future of nurse education? Quality. This must be our guiding principle, which underpins nurse education in the future. Critical care nursing will continue to evolve and adapt to new ways of delivering care, but the quality must remain constant, current, and steady. This translates to preparing nurses for practice who have sophisticated problem-solving skills, are able to translate and apply evidence-based practice, value the patient and community, and can work in partnership, and can transfer skills to a variety of settings. Flexibility. The future of the healthcare force must be developed to become adaptable responsive to change, multi-skilled, and produce lifelong learners. This suggests transferring the way we deliver educational curricula and how we build flexibility to ensure that nurses working in more remote areas can access first-class education. We must therefore harness technology more comprehensively. Diversity. Curriculum must address the needs of a multicultural society. We are all working in a mixed society nowadays, and our curriculum must represent this so that we can respond to our patients appropriately and sensitively. In addition, we must also make sure that the nursing profession represents the wider interests of the community, and we must attract nurses from a variety of backgrounds. We must also develop new career clinical pathways that are linked to clinical competencies. And linked with this, we must move to a formal recognition of advanced practice or as a key point of nursing excellence. These will be practitioners who remain in practice, who are not managers, who are not academics, but are celebrating and developing the boundaries of nursing care. The implications of delivering modern and progressive critical care education will depend on investment of nurse education and nurse research. We need to increase the remuneration for teachers and value them more. And we must have an appropriate number of academics to support students and to develop exciting, innovative, and intellectually stimulating curricula. But as nurses here, you too can play your part and demonstrate how your education has influenced the lives of patients you care for and made a difference to patient care. And also how you impact every day on the outcomes of morbidity and mortality. There's no denying that as members of EFNA, we still face many obstacles and challenges. However, we have been encouraged by the successes of the past 4 years, and we know we made significant strides. The political and economic state in Europe is far from stable. But we know that by working together, our commitment, our passion, and our spirit of entrepreneurship, we can achieve a great deal more. Grazie per l'attenzione.